to The Business of Being Brilliant, where I explore the human side of work. I talk to business leaders, academics, authors, and other experts about what's helped them to work at their best and how we can create organisations where everyone can flourish. I'm your host, Helen Beedham, organisational expert, speaker, and award-winning author of the Amazon best-selling business book, The Future of Time. You'll find the show notes at helenbeedham.com, where you can also sign up for my insights into the latest work trends, plus some exclusive offers to help you flourish at work and home. Now, let's crack on with this week's episode. Hello, and welcome to this final episode of Series 7. We've heard from some fantastic guests over the past 9 weeks who've been sharing their career stories and work wisdom with us. In this wrap-up episode, I've brought together some perspectives from all my guests on the question of how to step more confidently outside of our comfort zones and not just survive the experience, but to thrive in that new space or role that we're occupying. As we'll hear shortly, even people in the most senior of roles have moments of doubt about their own abilities or are uncertain about how best to move forward. And it's not just that pesky imposter syndrome or a lack of confidence that holds us back. Sometimes we get stuck and can't move forwards because of career or organisational barriers that are in our way. So, what is the mindset that helps us say yes to a daunting opportunity? Who can we call on for support and how can they support us? And how do we find out who's stuck and help them unlock their career potential? My guest Ruth Handcock, CEO of Octopus Money, shared her discovery that has helped her take increasingly big steps outside of her comfort zone over the course of her career. Here's Ruth.
I think over time I've realised is the delayed gratification that I've learned to thrive on is when I'm first out of my comfort zone. I wouldn't describe it as enjoyment. I might describe it as thrilling or stretching, but not enjoyable. I think that's a different emotion altogether. But the enjoyment and the satisfaction and the pride comes later. And I think as I've pushed myself out of my comfort zone a little bit, then a little bit more, then a little bit more, that feeling of pride is probably the best way to describe it. It gets greater and greater and greater the bigger the leap you take. And you learn to enjoy that and you learn to expect it when you behave like that. And I think if for those people who are sitting there thinking, oh my goodness, like what on earth are you talking about? I can't imagine anything worse. It's how you run a little experiment to see whether you do get that pride and you do get that feeling of self-worth afterwards. And if you do and you enjoy it, then maybe you want to do a bit more and a bit more. And if you try and you don't get that feeling, then probably it's not right for you and it's not right for everyone. But there are ways to try it in small, slightly safer ways.
I love that mindset of running little experiments, picking something you're going to do differently or that you've not done before, giving it a go, then noticing what the outcome was and also how you felt during and afterwards. One thing that helps me is to periodically stop and look back over the previous year and realise that I'd never have imagined I could get this far without all the little brave steps along the way that have led up to this point. My guest Sharon Spice, Chief Marketing and Value Officer at Green Park People Consultancy, talked about how she deals with situations when she's feeling daunted by the task ahead. For her, it helps to get curious about her nervousness and follow that chain of thought through to its conclusion before she takes the leap outside her comfort zone. Here's Sharon.
So I know if someone says to me, I need you to go and do this, and I think, well, I've never done that before. The first thing I think, well, if you think I can do that, then you obviously see something in me that enables me to actually deliver what you just asked me to do. And then I think, well, what's the worst that could happen? I'm going to make sure I do my prep. I'm going to make sure I get myself in the right mindset for the situation. I don't want to let people down. So if people come in, whether it's a presentation or whatever it might be, and I don't want to let myself down. So I think, okay, the worst that can happen is I don't do this at the best of my ability, but next time I will do. So I need to embrace it and learn from the experience. And I think just allowing myself, I guess, the opportunity to maybe fail a little bit. I think that is, people feel uncomfortable with failure, but I kind of put it into perspective, the situation I'm about to go into. So what is the worst thing that could happen if I don't do this 100%, or some of my inexperience shines through? But I've also found that when I've gone into situations where I probably have come across a bit of inexperience, people seem to warm to that sometimes, bizarrely, because they can see you're letting yourself be seen and you're being really authentic.
So as Sharon described it, sometimes what gives us the confidence to take a big step forwards is the confidence that other people have in us, even when we don't have it ourselves. That really resonated for me. Back in my corporate consulting days, I remember being asked to take on a big project leadership role, much to my surprise, as I was expecting a senior partner to lead it, and I wasn't as senior as that partner. While I definitely didn't feel up to the task, the fact that other people made it clear that they thought I was the best person for the job made me think, maybe they're right. Maybe I can do this. And I could, and I did. And it was one of the most stretching career experiences I've ever had. And it put me on the next level, career and confidence-wise. But I needed their confidence to take that leap. Another guest, Dami Patel, also talked about the importance of having people in your camp who are cheering you on and reminding you about your strengths. Dami is interim chair of the supervisory trio that oversees Taylor & Francis, publishers of books and academic journals, and part of Informa Group. Here's Dami talking about a significant turning point in her career.
So I wasn't really sure what I'd gotten myself into, and I called the then group HR director, Stephen, and I know you know Stephen Carter, our CEO. I know that he was behind some of this because he saw in me what I didn't see in myself, and he has to this day. And I think having the support, and I'm going to call it home support, you feel as though you have a cheerleader, and I had one in him. I had others in my own team, and that gives you the strength and the confidence to think, okay, they can do it. So I think I may well have something here that I could really contribute to. I also did have a little bit of a pep talk from my brother. And he said, who knows more about your specialism than you? So who knows more about the HR agenda and what we need to do and unlocking people? And that was the key. Focusing on your own strength rather than trying to keep up with others and trying to be like others. It's your own strength. And to this day, I maintain whenever I need that boost of, yeah, going back to your specialism. And people talk about authentic leadership. And honestly, I believe that's the skill we all need to lean into. They often imagine leadership as something they need to try and emulate. And it's something that's out there that you really have to reach for. But I feel if you have that innate ability to just bring your own strengths out and your own leadership style, that goes such a long way to getting your own confidence and people to really think, okay, this isn't what I've read about in terms of a typical leader or seen in a typical leader. You can be your authentic self and lead differently. And I think that was a turning point for me. That it wasn't this thing over here. It was actually something that's already here in me.
So getting curious about our fears, trying small experiments, and having a few cheerleaders encouraging us on are three things that can help us to take steps into the unknown. Sometimes you're lucky enough to get the opportunity to take the leap together with someone else who you trust, and that opens up a whole new source of support. My guest, Phil Burgess, is co-founder of Within and works with leaders to drive results by building cultures of connection. Phil talked about how earlier in his career, he and a close colleague were promoted into a joint managing director position at a leading creative agency. Here's Phil.
When we took over the roles, the company had just been acquired and rebranded, so people were quite disenfranchised. There was a lot of low engagement. Attrition was really high. And it was our first foray into a proper leadership role. And neither of us had really done it before. But being in a co-leadership position, one, it was less lonely. And it taught us about how to be really intentional as leaders, because we were really conscious of not being played off against each other, of appearing as a united front. And it forced us, I think, to really think about our own personal values and were they aligned? And luckily they were, because our personalities and working styles couldn't really be more different. And then that experience, I think, taught me a lot about what it takes to be a good leader. I made tons of mistakes. We got tons of stuff wrong. But in the end, we won a few Best Place to Work awards, and pride in working for the organization when we started was at 57%. And when we left the role, it was at 87%. So I take some personal pride in what we did there to build a great place to work.
What really struck me about Phil's story of that time is how they made loads of mistakes along the way to turning the company round and winning awards. We all love a success story. But we don't always acknowledge the wrong turns and the failed experiments that were part of that story's successful conclusion. This is something that my guest Brian Elliott called out in our conversation. Brian is a leading future of work expert, former CEO, co-founder of Future Forum, and the author of the best-selling How the Future Works. Here he is explaining how it's hard for leaders to acknowledge that they don't necessarily know how to move forwards.
Leaders are expected to have all the answers, right? We've trained leaders for decades that having all the answers is what makes you successful. And it's the people that we tout publicly in the media, when the reality is you don't, and you shouldn't, and you should depend on your team. But it's really hard to say, I don't know the answer to that question. But if you do, you're not opening yourself up to ridicule or to problems. You're opening yourself up to a team that might just engage with you to help solve the problem. But yeah, they need coaching and help in getting there.
Yes. And I totally understand that discomfort that comes from the public kind of culture and expectation of leaders to be these superhuman beings, right? That know what to do in every circumstance, have all the answers. We expect our leaders to have ridiculous powers and to be capable in every possible way. So I think part of that is on us as the rest of the organization to not cling on to that ideal or expectation.
We also have to give them a different path. And one of the things that I talk about with executives, both in groups and one-on-one, is you can do two things at once. You can set a highly aspirational vision. You can point to the mountain that you want your team to take, that you believe we will get there, and it is a massive undertaking. But you can also say, I don't fully know the path. I don't know every step along the way in that path. And so I need all of us to work together to get there. And that will invite people along on that journey, invite them to engage in it. And it doesn't at all take away your need to be aspirational and driven and goal-oriented. It just means that you need to invite people to help you figure out how to achieve it.
I love the way Brian puts that. And from my work and research in client organizations, I've heard so many times that people want to be invited to figure out the plan to get to the end goal. They want to contribute their views and experience, be listened to, and to know that they are trusted by leaders to help come up with the answers. It's totally demotivating for them to be left out of that conversation. Tapping into the talent that's spread across your workforce isn't always as easy as it sounds, though. And as we'll hear from Richard Roundtree, some organisations are overlooking people whose progress has stalled for one reason or another. It's hard to step outside your comfort zone if the opportunities that offer that are going to other people, or if you don't have anyone taking an interest in your career and giving you advice and support at key moments. Here's how Richard, Managing Director of Mortgages at Paragon Bank and a board member for Progress Together, describes the problem.
I think there's a number of factors here. One is around confidence levels, in terms of people get to a certain point and just settle, because they feel like they've reached their natural point of their career progression. or they look at an opportunity for a promotion and think, well, I don't quite tick all of those boxes. I'm not going to put myself forward. Or the fire goes out a little bit in terms of just been in an organization a long time, feel like I've reached that pinnacle of what I could do, and not given those stretch projects or opportunities, don't have a sponsor or haven't been mentored and developed to take it on to that next level. So there is, and I would describe it as a permafrost in a lot of organizations where people have either settled or hit those natural limits. And I think part of that is down to not preparing people for the leadership that's required nowadays. It's not about managing and overseeing tasks. It's got incredibly more complex in terms of getting the most out of our organizations and supporting people to reach their potential. That is the job now, in terms of a big part of the job. There's so much more organizations can do to prepare people and tap into that rich talent we have, and not always necessarily have to go for experience hires externally.
One demographic group that often finds themselves stuck in the permafrost is working parents. I met and interviewed hundreds of working parents when I was director of the professional network City Parents for 6 years. And I heard so many of them talk about either having to pause their careers or being slowed down because of constraints they bumped up against or needs that weren't adequately met in their organisation. Here's Verena Hefti, MBE, who's CEO and founder of the award-winning social enterprise Leaders Plus, which supports leaders with babies and young children in progressing their careers.
From an organizational perspective, in our research, we found a lot of people have informal flexibility, but their right to that, so for example, being able to leave at 11 o'clock to take your child to a doctor's appointment, that's usually okay and agreed with your line manager. But because you have that understanding with your line manager, you then think you can't get that same informal flexibility in a more senior role, and that prevents people from applying. And so with our program, we actually look at how do you make sure that you do get that informal flexibility, how do you agree that, and so on. That's very important. But also, most of the senior roles are advertised full-time and not flexibly. So that needs to change. Very clearly, that's preventing people from applying, and our research shows that in the big Parent Career Progression Report is on our website, leadersplus.org. But while that isn't changed yet, we also need to support parents to negotiate and to craft those roles themselves. And at the moment, we see that a lot of parents decide already before even thinking of a role. They see a role advertised full time and they decide not to go for it because no one has shown them that actually you can negotiate. And I'm not trying to say fix the working mothers, fix the parents, not at all. But that's why it's really special to have people together from same and different organizations to think through some of these challenges. Because if you are a working parent and you're trying to be in a senior role, you are usually a trailblazer, and that's hard, and you need other people around you.
So if we want to help people to step outside their comfort zones, to move forwards in their careers and to take the next step on the ladder or take on new responsibilities, then we have to find out what's getting in the way of that and do something about it. For different people, it'll be different barriers. My guest, Simon Reichwald, Chief Progression Officer at Connecta, is passionate about helping people to get in and get on in their careers. Here he is talking about how organisations can get a handle on who's making progress and who's not, and how to make the best use of all their talent.
One of the other changes that I'm seeing that will help deliver this outcome, because that's really all I care about is the outcome, it is better data collection from organisations to be able to actually then track progression, for example, from a gender perspective, from a race and ethnicity perspective, from a social mobility perspective, to see to what extent there are inequities, and there are, but to be getting that data, recognizing where their start point is, which is typically it's not great, and that's okay, because it's not great pretty much for everybody in most firms, right? It's not great. But then using that data and continuing to improve their volumes of data that they've got on their employees, to be able to track that and then measure the impact of the interventions that they're making to try and improve the equity. So it's not just about fairness, it's about maximizing all the talent that firms have. And I think that's one of the issues that we have around ED&I, is that firms are just missing out on talent. They're not making the most of all the talent they've got. They're making the most of a chunk of their talent, but not all. And that's key to productivity, which, of course, in this country is something we're not UK PLC particularly good at. So it's about unlocking that talent and unlocking great potential to achieve everything that those individuals are capable of.
My final guest, who was on the show last week, also talked about unlocking productivity and how training up great managers is key to achieving this. Anthony Painter, who leads the Chartered Management Institute's Policy and External Affairs, gave this great piece of advice for managers on how to take advantage of something very valuable that can help both them and their teams to grow successfully.
There is, of course, one group of people that will provide you the best learning opportunities that you could possibly hope for. And they're in close proximity to you. They're the people that you manage, right? And one of the stats that came through in the survey is that people with management qualifications are far more likely to ask those who manage for feedback than those who don't have that. And I think there's a reason for this. It's because you've got to give people support and ensure their well-being as far as it's possible to do so. But there are learning opportunities for yourself as well as a manager, and you'd be foolish not to take them, because as long as you have a psychologically safe environment, as long as you have an environment of trust, and I think good managers generally will cultivate that, then you will find those you like manage, if asked, will give you some very honest feedback, and that's really useful, and it makes you better, it makes the team better, it helps them be better.
So we've heard some fantastic words of advice from all my guests on how to step outside our comfort zones in a way that helps us grow as individuals and as managers. If I summarise all this advice into 3 points to take away, my 3 points would be: 1, embrace experimentation. Pushing beyond our comfort zones can feel pretty nerve-wracking, but it often leads to a sense of pride and satisfaction afterwards. Rather than going for high-risk leaps, pick small experiments that help you assess whether you're seeing the reward in terms of your personal growth and career advancement. 2 would be to cultivate confidence through support. Having the confidence to step into the unknown often comes from the belief and encouragement of others. So think about who might be your cheerleaders, mentors, or sponsors who recognise your potential and who are willing to champion you or help you reflect as you take on new challenges and responsibilities. And 3 point would be to remove barriers wherever you can. To unlock people's full potential, we need to collect data about who's progressing and who's not, and then address some of the barriers that are holding people back. And if you're a manager, getting feedback from your team members can give you valuable insights into how to manage better and build a high-performing team. My thanks to all my guests for sharing their career stories and their wisdom on the podcast. Series 8 will be back in May with another lineup of brilliant leaders and workplace experts, and we'll be discussing topics from leading through disruption to building a workshop culture, from finding the people with the skills you need to the key trends that are shaping our work environments. To catch the next series when it lands, subscribe to the show and sign up for my mailing list at helenbeedham.com. Right, I'm off for a very big adventure. I'll tell you all about that at the start of the next series. In the meantime, keep on being brilliant. We've come to the end of this series. If something in particular caught your interest, don't forget that all the links and the show notes are at www.helenbeedham.com/podcast. If you've enjoyed listening, please do share the podcast with friends and on social media, and leave a review wherever you listen to your podcasts to help other listeners to discover it too. See you in a few weeks' time for the next series and more conversations about the business of being brilliant.